You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. You've heard that advertisers are keeping track of every online site you visit. They keep track of the data to try to determine what you're likely to buy. Well, that online data collection is just the beginning. John Chaney Lippold is an assistant professor of American culture at the University of Michigan. He's written a book titled We Are Data, Algorithms and the Making of Our Digital Selves. Let's start with the simple stuff. I hear friends or I see comments online that if Facebook is trying to determine who I am, it's missing by a mile, judging from the things that pop up as things I might buy or find interesting. How well can they figure out who I really am?
I think there's two ways we can answer that. The first way is they will have no idea who you are because who you are is a special spiritual thing that is contingent on, you know, what you believe. But then there's also the ways that they can interpret you based on extant categories. So Facebook, for example, they try to figure out your ethnicity through what they call ethnic affinity, that it's not necessarily based on who you might be or your history of your family, but rather what kind of things do you like on Facebook? Who are you friends with on Facebook? Maybe what your last name is. And through that, they assign something. For example, I'm Danish, but they think I'm Hispanic, and they think I'm Hispanic only because I like tango music on Facebook.
So how close does the digital self come to the real self in most cases?
In a sense, I think that we're talking about two different things, and so it gets close enough, but the idea is that they're not trying to understand me in terms of ethnicity in order to really get my heritage. What they're trying to do is sell me a product,
right,
or they're trying to sell me to a consumer commercial firm. So in that way, they're actually very effective if they're trying to sell me tango music, but they're also really ineffective if they're trying to talk to me about, you know, discrimination that Hispanics have in the U.S. But they're always trying to do the former instead of the latter.
So let's talk a little more about the commercial perspective. What's the harm in a retailer learning more about me? I mean, if they can help me find the things I want in my life, that's okay, right?
So in a very kind of like regular sense, there's nothing necessarily wrong. What happens is when there's an asymmetry of information between the consumer and the firm, then we get into a little bit of trouble. For example, 2014, Orbitz.com would actually take prices for planes and hotels and front load more expensive planes and hotels if you had a Mac browser, a Mac computer system, or maybe even a screen that was larger than normal.
Wow, is that even legal?
It's totally legal based on what we call dynamic pricing, but normally we always do this. Like if you see a person with a really nice suit come into a store, you might say, oh, this person can pay a little bit more, and you might push them towards more expensive jewelry or suits. But instead, on the digital, in the digital world, you can be very particular and not just show them a side of the store, but you can show them a particular product with a particular price.
Hmm. Now, I use a smartphone, I use the computer, I use a work computer. As a reporter, I visit a ton of sites that otherwise I wouldn't be visiting. Are they gathering all of that data from these different devices and these different motivations, that is personal versus professional, and saying this is who he is?
Yeah, and not just one person, but like several hundred different companies are taking all of this data. Some of them are selling some of the data to others. And so it's this almost cesspool of data that then takes, yeah, your cell phone location, but also who you're around. So the fact that my cell phone is now near your cell phone means we're kind of connected in a datafied way. And so it takes also the ability to connect your personal computer to your professional computer based on the fact that you might have similar behaviors on both, or you might use a similar account on both. And so it's able to tether, yeah, a large mass of seemingly disparate information together into then a datafied profile that assumes things like gender, class, or age.
We mentioned the data shared. I'm just wondering, who are the big keepers of all that data?
The big ones that we can normally think of are the Facebooks and the Googles. They're smaller companies who do marketing that I talk about. They're called like Audience Science or Quantcast, people or firms you would never actually hear about. But increasingly, we have ISPs getting in the game. The recent Trump administration rolled back FCC regulations and said ISPs couldn't involve in this $83 billion industry, but now they're giving carte blanche to take 100% of your traffic that comes from you and try to profile you accordingly.
One of the things I've always wondered, does Facebook sell this data, or do they use it and say it's proprietary so that we can sell bigger ads?
Facebook, as a monopoly or kind of monolithic platform, they're reluctant to sell their data, and they've actually explicitly said they wouldn't, but that doesn't really mean anything. They could change their mind later. But they say they won't sell it to outside companies, but what they can do is they can sell portals to their consumers. And so what they do is they profile their consumers and say, if you want access to this portal, you can pay us a little bit of money and we will give you access. But that's after the data's been processed and often after you've given an age or an ethnicity through their pattern assessments.
You indicate in the book that it's not just corporate America, but law enforcement is also making some assumptions about you based on the same data. What are they doing with that information?
So that is very interesting because in the example of my book, the Chicago Police Department takes block data from streets and tries to figure out what is high crime and what is low crime. So a block might be high crime at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then the next day it might be low crime at 9 a.m. The idea, though, is that this data isn't necessarily true or effective. So what happens is there's the Chicago Police Department created this list of about 400 people that, based on their social media connections or based on the contacts that they have in their phone, would label them at risk from the Chicago Police Department. This isn't because they're actually at risk of committing a crime, but just their social networks suggest they're more likely to be connected to criminals than not.
So you're guilty by association.
Precisely that.
Wow. You also indicate the data are used to attempt to determine your race, your gender, your sexual identity, your age, whether you're a foreigner. How can that be used when it's so unreliable, as we were talking earlier, because, you know, you are not who they think you are?
Yeah. I think with the idea of being a foreigner is very compelling because the NSA in 2013, when the PRISM documents came out from the Snowden leaks, we really had to reconsider how it is that citizenship is allocated online, because when you go online, you just have an IP address. You just have a MAC address of your hardware and your computer. So the NSA, without kind of admitting that they did this because it was all in private, they reformed what it meant to be a citizen. And so instead of being a citizen because they have a passport or their birth certificate, you're a citizen if your data is seen to be 51% confidently citizen, and thus you're a foreigner if you're seen to be 51% confidently foreign.
So let's say I'm a United States citizen, and in fact, I'm a native. I was born here, but I have a lot of relatives who speak Spanish, and I text them in Spanish back and forth. I have some relatives back in the old country, and I communicate with them. I would be considered a foreigner.
Most definitely. The ideas that the NSA uses to draw this are exactly what you said. If you speak any languages other than English, if you have media connections or communication connections to people outside the U.S., or even if you go visit your family in the old country, if you draw an IP address from a place outside the borders of the United States, that is a datafied element that suggests confidence in your foreignness.
Let's talk about if I can figure out what they're saying about me, because I can file a Freedom of Information Act and I can obtain the file the FBI might have on me. Can I obtain the data law enforcement is using to build a profile of me?
In the case of the CPD, the Chicago Police Department, it's likely that you could get a FOIA request for that. But for something like the NSA, that is, every NSA FOIA request has more or less been denied. But also, a lot of this stuff is changing every day. So my citizenship, when I'm talking to friends in the U.S., might be very high citizenship of the U.S. But then the next day, if I'm talking to friends outside, or maybe if I'm doing a vacation or going on vacation and doing research out of the country, that would then suggest I'm foreigner. So it doesn't really matter necessarily this dossier. It's at that moment of when they're trying to make that an assessment. What is your data saying?
This seems so George Orwell, 1984, Big Brother really is watching you. What can we do to preserve any shred of privacy?
So I think that the idea of privacy is, for me, compelling because we shouldn't give it up. I think privacy is very important, but in the increasing saturation of media into our lives, it's difficult to find the refuge of like a 19th century privacy where you can just close the door and be by yourself. Rather, I think we should take the idea of U.S. privacy law, which is the right to be let alone, and think about it in a subjective sense of like, how am I at this moment being let alone, or am I being controlled? And so in the case of these data veiling companies or the companies trying to algorithmically assess you, they are trying to get a little bit more money out of you, or they're trying to direct you just one way or the other. And the way they do it is through patterns. And so if you don't fit the pattern, it's likely that you have a little bit more freedom, a little bit more ability to be let alone. And so a lot of the things in the book I talk about are actually not trying to hide yourself from surveillance, but saying if the logic is that you have to have a pattern to make you're legible to the algorithmic system, what they should do is just have a bunch of random queries that completely confuse the algorithms that try to find signal in the noise. Because if you produce enough noise in the system, that might then completely upend the potential signal.
No, as a reporter, I might be already doing
that's
that.
That's potentially the case, yeah.
All right, that's John Chaney Lippold. He's the author of the book, We Are Data, Algorithms, and the Making of Our Digital Selves. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.